Hello, welcome to the inaugural Nerdcasm podcast. I'm Adam Wright.
And I'm Rick Savage.
Today we are podding from Rick's basement.
That's true. And from this little dungeon, we'll be bringing you knowledge bombs that we're going to drop right into your brain about all the latest nerd-related news, discussion about all the lame things that we think are cool, and just some random shit in between. So let's start off with the news, Adam. What do you think?
Well, some important television news at the moment. NBC, the American broadcasting company, is cutting some of its larger comedy sitcom series, including Community, Parks and Rec, and 30 Rock. Now, I'm a big fan of all three of those shows. I know that you haven't started on Parks and Rec yet.
Guilty. Haven't checked that out yet.
It's a pretty fantastic show. We're all big fans of Community and 30 Rock especially. It's
Got to keep that 30 Rock flag flying, though. Definitely. Yeah.
Important news about that is also that it's going to be the last season coming up next year. Also, the end of Alec Baldwin's career.
Alleged end of Alec Baldwin's career. But if it is, what a great way to go out in one of the best sitcoms of the modern time, really.
Well, he's always said that he was going to stop in 2012. And if they're going to film it all by the end of the year, then I guess that's it for The Shadow.
Well, yeah, that's probably one of his least commendable roles, but definitely. In fact,
the man who's a shadow, it's brilliant.
I'm trying to think now, other than 30 Rock, which stuff I've seen Alec Baldwin in where I've been like, yeah, Alec Baldwin's the man. I think it really is just
Thomas
30 Rock.
And the Magical Railroad.
Oh shit, I forgot about how good Thomas and the Magical Railroad
with
is.
With Mara Wilson in her last acting thing.
Last time that child actor was ever seen alive. What about A Simple Wish? Was that before Thomas and the Magical Railroad?
No, it was before.
Was it? Yeah. She was quite, if I remember correctly, she was quite old in Thomas and the Magical Railroad.
Yeah, that bubble had pretty much burst by then.
I mean, like, child actors are a strange thing, though. Have you seen Haley Joel Osment, like, recently? Not like, personally, because I know you two aren't best of buds after all that shit that went down between you.
Well, I think, you're trying to be funny, but I'm a Kingdom Hearts fan, and so me and him are pretty good.
Yeah, that's true, I suppose. But have you seen what he looks? It literally looks like. Have you seen the site manbabies.com? Now, anybody listening who's not been to manbabies.com, get on manbabies.com. You'll piss yourself. It'll waste an evening. You'll love it. You've got time. Basically, what manbabies does, it photoshops a picture of a man holding his son or his daughter, and they swap the faces around. Now, Haley Joel Osment looks exactly like that, like somebody's taken his young face from The Sixth Sense and just grafted it onto the body of like a 20-odd-year-old man.
With AI.
With AI. It's just creepy. But yeah, in other news, though, we've got the very, very sad delay of Bioshock Infinite until 2013. Now, this is something that's definitely close to my heart, as I love the shit out of the original Bioshock.
It's an amazing game.
It is an excellent game. And, there's nothing being said yet as to why it's been pushed back to 2013.
Because of its Mass Effect ending.
Oh, yeah, there is a rumour that it's going to have the terrible Mass Effect 3 ending, but maybe it won't. Personally, I think that they're just trying to put a bit more polish on it before it comes out. That's what I'm hoping anyway. Because as much as I loved Bioshock 1, the ending for that game was pretty terrible, if we're all honest. We're all grown-ups here, we can say it. Bioshock 1 had a shit ending.
Well, same with Bioshock 2. Apparently the downloadable content for Bioshock 2 was better than Bioshock 2.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. Unfortunately, not enjoying Bioshock 2 that much at all. I never really ventured into the Minerva's Den stuff, but apparently, in fact, that's been in this week's news as well. The guys who made the Minerva's Den expansion to Bioshock have been given their own development by 2K Studios, so they might be doing something pretty interesting in the future.
You see, that's the thing. I think that we should stop getting DLC and we should start getting expansion packs coming back, because that's what we wanted when we... Like, Shivering Isles, that was an expansion pack, it wasn't DLC.
Oh yeah, I want something substantial from a game. If I'm going to be paying extra money for a game that I've already bought, like, I want something substantial. I don't want horse armour, I don't want extra costumes, I don't want one or two levels, I don't want to finish it in an afternoon. Obviously, I'm not expecting you to, like, if, for instance, when they bring out, like, a Skyrim expansion, I'm not expecting another 40 to 100 hours of gameplay, but I'm expecting at least 20 or something. Like, something that I feel that's valued in what I've paid for it, at least.
As the, it depends on how much it costs. If it's a third of a game price, you expect a third of a game.
Yeah.
So, also in the news, Kick-Ass 2 is officially underway, which is following the news that Chloe Grace Moretz, the great child actress who you might know from 30 Rock.
One of the only child actors that has the official nerdcasm backing.
Yes. She will be playing as Carrie in the upcoming remake of the Stephen King novel, which is quite interesting. The problem with that is, though, that Chloe Grace Moretz is a cute kid. Sissy Spacek was kind of odd, backwatery looking, so you could tell that she would be picked on. I don't see Chloe Grace Moretz being, look at her, let's make fun of her for having a period.
But then, seeing Chloe Grace Moretz, would you also assume that she'd dress up in a pink wig, stab a dude from the chest, and call people cunts?
Spoiler alert.
Oh yeah, in case you haven't seen Kick-Ass, it's 2 years old. Sorry about that.
That's skip my mind. I thought you were talking about Carrie. Did that happen in Carrie? Oh, good, it's been a long time. All I remember is John Travolta, spoiler alert, getting blown up in a car.
Well, that movie's
out like a punk.
That movie's 40 years old. Then that'll bring us to a section that you'll hear later on about going out like a punk, so stay tuned to that. But next up, we're also talking about the Tony Hawk HD re-release that's coming in June. Now, this I'm very excited for, mainly because, if we're honest, no offence to Tony, but his games have sucked dick. They've been very bad. Like, the Tony Hawk games have been very bad in the over the last... What was the last good Tony Hawk game, do you
American
think?
Wasteland, to me.
Oh, I'd go further back than that. I'd maybe say Underground 1, maybe even Tony Hawk's 4.
It was silly.
When it got to Underground 2, I thought I might as well be playing Jackass the game.
They made the Jackass the game and nobody played it, so...
And that's why they made Underground 2, because it was like, oh shit, we've got the Jackass property and no one bought the game, so what are we going to do?
The Jackass the game was after Tony Hawk Underground 2, so they obviously thought that there was something there and the bubble had burst. Because of Tony Hawk Underground 2, but yeah.
So the Jackass game actually came out after Tony Hawk's 2.
Yeah. I think it came out the same time as the Little Britain game on PlayStation 2.
I remember the Jackass game coming out before Tony Hawk's Underground 2, I'm sure.
No, it was because everyone was like amazed that you got Steve-O and Bam Margera.
Phil Margera on a skateboard and Ben Franklin. It just got ridiculous.
Along with Kiss.
Kiss was Underground 1, wasn't it? Yeah, Kiss was Underground 1 because there was that level
Hotter
where if you did the whole rail, then the Kiss sign would blow up in fireworks and you'd feel really cool about yourself.
It's a good game. They should have included that into the storyline. That would have been quite interesting. I thought, hey, we're a Kiss concert now.
But yeah, so what do you know about this HD re-release? What sort of stuff can fans be looking to expect from a new Tony Hawk's game? Well, not a new Tony Hawk's game, but a remixed Tony Hawk's game of sorts.
Well, I'm not sure if it's going to be the entire trilogy or if it's just the first one that they're doing.
Yeah.
So if it's the first one, I wouldn't be that interested, because hopefully if they did, they'd have the moveset, the sensible moveset of the later games. Can't revert, it's...
Getting off the board, that's not a necessity at all. That doesn't bother me. But reverts, and to get that manual to revert thing to happen easily, because they brought out reverts in Tony Hawk 3, and it was a bit of a fannying about. They didn't really nail it until Tony Hawk's 4, so...
It wasn't until 4 that you got spine transfers as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, spine transfers. Yeah, if they kept everything from the first 4 games, then I'd be happy with the gameplay.
Yeah. 4 was so good.
What do you think about locations? Do you think it'll just be like... The stuff that the places we really enjoyed from the first 3?
If it's Tony Hawk 1, I didn't really play Tony Hawk 1, but I played the shit out of Tony Hawk's 3, 4, 2, Underground, Underground 2, and American Wasteland. The rest, not so much. But
so you didn't get the one with the great plastic skateboard peripheral?
No, unfortunately not.
But Tony Hawk's Ride. Wasn't there another one? They did a set like it was one of the biggest. It was one of the biggest flops in gaming, and yet they still thought we'll do another one next year. This one will work. It's fine.
Was the one after Ride? Because I know Downhill Jam didn't do very well.
Was that the same one?
Downhill Jam was the one that released for the Wii, I believe.
Yeah.
And then they released it again, I think.
Did that have a skateboard with it though?
No, but somehow you had to use a Wii controller to incorporate skating in a different way to any other game.
Fair enough. Well, it doesn't sound that good anyway.
So, also in film news, Smurfs 3 is apparently underway, even though Smurfs 2 hasn't finished. Now, this is an odd subject for us because we haven't seen Smurfs. Have you seen Smurfs?
I haven't had the pleasure of seeing the Smurfs film, no.
Smurfs 3, The Squeakquel.
But it's just what grabs me about the story is the fact that a studio is so confident in their ability to make bank on the next Smurf film that they're already bankrolling a third Smurf film and it's been greenlit. Now, I haven't seen the box office figures, but that first Smurf movie must have absolutely fucking killed at the box office for that to happen.
It's because of Katy Perry being in it.
But, I mean, what's your opinion on the whole nostalgia revival thing? Like, bringing back beloved children's, like, characters?
Well, if we're going to the kids, if we're going to the kids' cartoon thing, you did get a sense of glee watching the trailer for Garfield.
But then you saw the real film, and
exactly.
I mean, even Bill Murray would admit that Garfield wasn't his finest moment.
From Zombieland, I believe it was Garfield 2. Garfield 2 that he said that.
Yeah.
He
do you have any regrets, Garfield 2? Yeah, exactly. But I mean, the whole cash-in thing—it's getting a bit too far for my own opinion.
Yogi Bear wasn't that bad, I thought, but it's like, did you really want to see Yogi Bear in the first place?
Did you actually watch Yogi Bear? That film was fucking dreadful. I just don't like the idea. Why did there need to be a Yogi Bear? If you're bringing out a Yogi Bear film, make it all 3D animated or all cel animated. There doesn't need to be a live action component in Yogi Bear. And you don't need to attach, like, minor celebrities to it. You just need to write a good script. You just need to get a good script. You don't need to attach any names to it. You just need a good script that works with that character.
The thing that was good about Yogi Bear was Dan Aykroyd was like the number one in the casting bill, and it's been many decades since he's been top billing.
But then maybe that shows you before you went into Yogi Bear just how bad Yogi Bear was going to be if Dan Aykroyd. No offense to Dan Aykroyd, because he's earned his stripes. I mean.
He wasn't in Stripes. the rest of the Ghostbusters were in it, but he wasn't in it.
That's true, actually. He was the only one that wasn't in Stripes.
Well, Benny Hudson as well, he wasn't in it. But
yeah, but he's not even a proper Ghostbuster. They had to hire him afterwards.
Hey, as long as you get paid, I'll believe anything you want.
Exactly. Like, he's not a proper Ghostbuster. He got hired. He's just a scab, that dude.
Well, the revival of children's stuff came back because of the king of the revivals, Scooby-Doo. Which was an absolutely fantastic film wrote by James Gunn.
Yeah, I actually really did enjoy that. Like, do you know what? I actually enjoyed the second Scooby-Doo a bit more as well.
Yeah, that was pretty brilliant.
I think it was mainly because in the second Scooby-Doo, they did the whole, oh, it's not actually monsters as it was in the first film. They actually brought in, like, real monsters into it, and I wasn't really that into the fact that it was real monsters. I always liked the whole fucking, oh, it's that dude from the warehouse. He was just wearing a mask all along. Oh, I would have gotten away with it too.
And you guys, I knew all along.
And basically, like, that's what it did for the second one. It was actually just some dude in a mask using some crazy technology.
And it's quite interesting. You know James Gunn, the guy that wrote it, and he directed films like Super and Slither and things. He's actually married to Jenna Fisher from The American Office.
Oh, yeah. Well, Jenna, who plays Pam.
Pam, yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's interesting. Yeah. She is a handsome woman, so.
Well, she was.
Well done.
2 years ago.
Oh, we're getting into this now. She's still pretty.
Sorry, James Gunn, if you're listening. Sorry, Jenna Fisher.
She's still very pretty. I mean, she's got a bit of timber now, but that's fine.
She'll never be as attractive as she was in Walk Hard. She was beautiful in that film.
In Walk Hard, she was beautiful in that. I'll give you that. And it is a beautiful film as well. It's a touching story. If anybody hasn't seen Walk Hard, it's a touching biopic about...
Is it The Life and Times of Dewey Cox?
Life and Times of Dewey Cox, featuring Oscar-nominated actor John C. Reilly. So you know it's going to be amazing.
Tim Meadows as well. And you never paid for drugs. Not once.
What's that? Cocaine.
You don't want none of this coke, no, cocaine.
I think I want to try me some of that cocaine. But
wrong kid died.
it's a infinite mine of quotes, that film. If anyone hasn't seen it who's listening, go and watch it. Either that or just kill yourself, because if you don't want to watch it, you're not really worthy.
The makers of this podcast do not advocate killing of oneself.
Yeah, don't really kill yourself. I just say nasty things sometimes. I don't mean them. I still love you.
Reevaluate, we'll say. Reevaluate your life.
Reevaluate your priorities in life. That's better. But in other video game news, again, it must be the week of things getting delayed to 2013, but the new Tomb Raider game, that's been pushed back to 2013 also. I actually saw some footage from that at E3, and it does look surprisingly good, considering that Tomb Raider games haven't been good since... In fact, if I'm honest, I've never really enjoyed a Tomb Raider game that much.
Well, I've enjoyed all the Tomb Raider games. I haven't played them properly. I like the flash of enjoying them, but they are pretty hollow experiences after a while. You need to go Uncharted. If you want the experience that you think you're going to get from a Tomb Raider, you go to Uncharted.
But ironically enough, the new Tomb Raider trailer, it did look like they're using the sort of storytelling techniques that the Uncharted games are famed for. Now, personally, I mean, we've discussed this before, but I personally think that's absolutely fine that they're doing that, because without Tomb Raider, Uncharted wouldn't be anywhere anyway. Because, I mean, Uncharted borrowed so much from the Tomb Raider, from the Tomb Raider games.
I like to think of it as, give me that, you're not doing it right, this is how you do it. And then, because there's some of the guys that make Jack and Daxter, and then they're just like, no, we can do, give us a shot at this kind of genre.
Did Naughty Dog make Jack and Daxter?
Yeah.
Oh, right, I didn't know Naughty Dog did it. I knew they'd done Crash Bandicoot before that.
Yeah.
They've got a new game out though soon, and that looks really cool. Like, it's like a drama game, like...
Sounds good already.
I mean, I'm not selling it very well, but I saw the trailer for it. Like, try and find it on YouTube because the name escapes me right now. But it did look like a really interesting thing. It looked like something along the lines of a more interactive Heavy Rain, something like that.
We need to bring back Fahrenheit because Fahrenheit was fantastic.
Fahrenheit was fantastic up until the bit when it went all crazy Matrix style.
Well, also in movie news, we've got some more Guillermo del Toro work coming up. Apparently he's going to be working on Pinocchio, which nobody saw coming. Now, Guillermo del Toro is quite famed at the moment for not following through on his projects that he's supposed to be doing. For instance, Frankenstein, Mountains of Madness. Now, we know Mountains of Madness isn't something that he was taken from. It was taken from him, literally.
Well, it was, yeah.
It was $150 million it was going to cost, and apparently...
It was pretty much...
It was a done deal,
A done deal, and then it just all fell apart. I was wounded. I'm a fucking huge H.P. Lovecraft fan, and when I heard that news, I was devastated, because I knew that if anybody could do justice to, like, visually... to the H.P. Lovecraft, to the Cthulhu mythos, to like the whole H.P. Lovecraft, Elder God sort of stuff, it would be Guillermo del Toro.
Is Cthulhu in Mountains of Madness?
Yes, he is.
Is he?
Well, it references Cthulhu.
I should read and it sometime. I think they made a comic book series of them, haven't they?
Some of the comics are great. Some of them are really worth checking out.
It'd be easier for me to digest than having to read things.
Well, the stories are short. They're all short stories. It's not like they're all big novels or anything. They are hard going just because he uses a lot of flowery language. And to be honest, he has got a few... Just because of the time that it came out, there are a lot of pretty bad racial epithets in those stories now that don't really hold up to today's standards.
But like Frank Miller.
But if you take it with a pinch of salt and you understand the context that he uses certain terms in and like the historical background back then when those stories were written, they are still perfectly viable, if anything, like perfect horror stories, apart from the fact that obviously it comes from a time where people were rooted in that sort of closed-mindedness.
Well, we're going to take this time to advertise the Twitter account. If you Twitter us at CMAdamAdman, which is at CMADAMADMAN, you'll be able to join in the discussion with us. Tell us what you think about the podcast. We'll bring you up. Eventually, we might be able to do a live feed or something, then you could just join in the conversation that way. But we'd like to hear your thoughts and feedback. We're going to post this on iTunes. Hopefully, you're listening on iTunes. And with that, if you review us, that will give us bonus points, whether it's good, whether it's bad. Constructive criticism is always the best, I find.
Don't be too harsh. It's our first time. Be gentle with us. But if you have any questions as well, we'll if we get
who the fuck are you guys? Why should we be listening to you?
If you have any good viable
Kevin
questions,
Smith's out there with podcasts. Why should we be listening to you?
I mean, this is it. I don't know why any of you are listening to us. If you are, because Kevin Smith does do better podcasts than us.
Well, he does maybe too many.
Yeah, he does too many podcasts. We're a focus podcast. This is it. We're not a gaming podcast. We're not anything podcast, really.
We haven't lived an exciting enough life to just regale stories about ourselves.
Yeah, and unlike Kevin Smith, again, Kevin Smith, this is nothing personal, but we won't be name-dropping famous people that we've met every 10 minutes, so that won't bug you if you listen to us.
Kevin Smith, I'm a big fan of yours, and if you ever want to be on the podcast, I will love that.
Yeah, if Kevin Smith wants to come on our podcast, yeah, please. But, yeah, if we get some cool questions over the run of the podcast and we get enough and we get some cool ones, then we'll probably start opening up a section in the show where we start answering your questions and just give you some nice feedback from saying hello to us and such.
Opinions are plenty from us. Now, it's a part of the news, and because it is the summer of the Avengers and technically Spider-Man, we're going to go for some Marvel talk now.
Ooh, now I'm in my element, because this is where I get my geek on, isn't it?
We'll start with Spider-Man first. The Amazing Spider-Man is out in July, I believe, which is the regular time for the other Spider-Man films to come out. There's more trailers, with the Lizard still looking like Will Arnett's character in Monsters vs. Aliens.
That's true.
And the whole mythos of Spider-Man is changing right before our eyes, it seems.
It seems like there are two things that are going on with that film. On one side, there's the really poor choice of villains.
Proto-Goblin.
Proto-Goblin, what the hell is that? Reese fans, probably not the best casting decision for Doc Connors. Who knows? I mean, Reese, I'm doing him a disservice because Reese Ifans is a decent enough actor, but I've never seen him play anything but Reese Ifans in a film. Even in Mr. Nice, when he's supposed to be playing Howard Marks, like he just plays Reese Ifans.
He's meant to be good in Anonymous. I haven't seen that yet.
I haven't seen that, unfortunately, so I can't really attest to that. But then on the other hand, seeing in trailers, seeing Spider-Man's sense of humour and stuff come out a bit more, seeing his jokes a bit more cheeky. Like,
he seems a little too confident, I find, though, and he's meant to be in his high school phase still. So
but that's always been...
He's not supposed to have that confidence. I think, doesn't the Spider-Man powers give him that confidence to say, hey, I know something you don't, I'm going to be a little more confident about it?
No, like, the whole point of the Spider-Man character was, like, the whole point, the reason why he throws those jokes out is because he's terrified. They explained it, like, into the Stan Lee run, like why he's always throwing jokes about. They've gone back to it a few times to explain why he's always chucking jokes about in the middle of fights and stuff. And one, it catches his enemies off guard. If you're mocking somebody, you start to wind them up. And when they start getting wound up, they start making mistakes. But then on the other hand, you've got the whole thing about the fact that he is terrified. And so, I mean, in those situations, is telling those jokes for his own benefit at the same time, if you get what I mean. Like, it's quite a complex thing that the character does. Like, a lot of people just write it off as being like that sort of, that's what Spider-Man does, he goes around telling jokes. But there is a reason why he tells jokes, because he gets frightened, and like he tells jokes to like lift himself up and to get the better of his adversaries.
Well, news from the Spider-Man film is apparently at the end there will be a hint towards who the next villain is going to be, and because Oscorp obviously features so much, we've seen it in the trailers, seems to be where Dr. Connors works, we can assume it's going to be a goblin of some kind again. Now, I wasn't a big fan of the idea of the goblin being the first villain we see in the original Spider-Man series. It's not someone we need to see hashed up again, but that's what we thought about Bane, I guess.
Well,
but they did a lot more of a service to the Green Goblin in Spider-Man than Batman and Robin did for Bane.
Well, I think I agree with you that the Green Goblin isn't really a first Spider-Man movie sort of villain. If anything, The Dr. Octopus could have served as a better villain in the first film, because it's sort of like the whole Batman Joker thing. Like, it's nice to set up the fact that there's going to be this arch nemesis, this one big villain that this person's going to be battling with all the way through. But because the first film in a franchise is always so much about the origin story and so much about what drives that character, by introducing like the true arch nemesis in that first film, it does it so much of a disservice, I think. Like, if for instance, like in Dark Knight, we see the Joker once we know who Batman is. We know everything about Batman at that point. So the Dark Knight's not really a film about Batman, like about learning who Batman is and what he does. It's about learning who the Joker is and learning about this whole thing that Batman seems to create within Gotham City. Just by being there, he seems to attract this sort of madness to this place.
Well, if that's the thought, wouldn't it have been good to put, say, Eddie Brock as a character in Spider-Man 2?
Yeah, it definitely would have done. Like, they did a really good job of peppering Dr. Connors all the way through Spider-Man films, and he was always missing an arm, and Sam Raimi even said that.
I think that would have been a good thing, though, if in the first Spider-Man he had an arm, but in the second Spider-Man he didn't have an arm. They just never mention it, and then by, like, the fourth one, that's when you get the lizard.
Well, the fourth one...
Spoiler alert! Well, Dr. Connors is the lizard.
Spoiler alert, in case you're going to watch a film that will never be made, but Sam Raimi was actually going to use the lizard and Mysterio.
Well, actually, in my dissertation, I was doing it about Sam Raimi, and apparently one of the reasons that it was so hard to come up with an agreement, apart from the whole time constraints about Spider-Man 4, was that he'd come up with a story with John Malkovich being the Vulture, and Anne Hathaway was going to play it as the Vulture's daughter.
Anne
it was
Hathaway,
going to be a story, yeah.
Big in video game films, apparently. She's everyone's first choice.
Comic book films.
Why did I say video
before
games?
We
yeah.
Before we get corrections.
Exactly, look at that.
Well, the other part of the news is that the Avengers has recently just broke the $1 billion mark in 2 weeks of being released.
That is a big chunk of change. It does put the Avengers film up there with big hitters like The Dark Knight.
Well, it's more than Avatar and Titanic now, I believe.
Has it actually surpassed Avatar already?
Yes, it has.
In 2 weeks?
Yeah.
That's fantastic news.
That's Fantastic Four.
If anything surpasses Avatar, I'm all for it, because I hate Avatar.
I enjoy Avatar quite a bit, and
but we won't go into Avatar today, because that's a whole episode of the podcast.
I was already glad that it had passed, say, Titanic, because I made a big deal of saying that, but it's Titanic.
But what about the increased revenue that Titanic's been given because of Titanic 3D? Has that made any effect?
Have you seen that whole thing on Twitter, the Twitter craze that went that all these children didn't know that Titanic was real?
Oh, yeah. I remember, like, at first I thought that must just be a couple of idiots, but apparently there are thousands of people on the internet who post status like, didn't know the Titanic was real.
Well,
what?
It's an interesting kind of thing, because it's not a part of history that gets brought up in lessons, say.
It's something that everyone knew about. I mean, even before the film Titanic came out, like, as a kid, I knew I could draw you the Titanic and show you what it looked like, you know what I mean?
Well, you could blame it on, like, the whole internet culture. With the internet, people can look for things, but they will only find what they look for.
Yeah, they're only looking for what they
this
want.
This way they're not absorbing information the way that people would before the internet, say.
Yeah.
Say, before television, where else are you going to get your stuff from apart from the radio, really?
Books.
Newspaper.
There's this thing called books, Adam, and people...
Where would you find these books?
In a building called the library.
Oh, you mean the toilets?
Oh, I go in there all the time for a piss. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. That's really handy, that place. I always, like, if I need a wee and I'm in the middle of town, I always go into that place. I've seen books there, but I didn't know we could take them. Can we just take them?
Yeah, no, I don't like signing up for no cards. The Avengers has an Easter egg hinting at the next villain. We won't say who that is.
It's been up 3 weeks in this country. But do you know what?
As a part of the news, we do know that Avengers 2 is officially being made.
And to be honest, I've actually seen a lot of things on the internet about American Avengers fans really thanking British people for having the film for a week and not spoiling it at all.
Yeah, we were pretty good.
We're well behaved with our spoilers, you know. Yeah. I mean, we have good shit that needs to not be spoiled. We have, like, Sherlock and Doctor Who, so we have stuff that doesn't need to be spoiled, so we learn how to not spoil things.
Did we get The Matrix a week before? Not, like, The Matrix sequels a week before?
I don't know, sometimes we get
lucky.
Sometimes we do get lucky. I remember 4 came out in Australia, like, a month before it came out anywhere
else.
I like
the way that, the American companies look at us and think they're not a threat.
Yeah, I don't care about that shitty little island, that's fine.
We're the guinea pigs for box office.
But yeah,
in certain cases.
But a billion well, like topping box office records in 3 weeks. Is it a good sign for video game movies, do you think?
Comic book movies.
Why am I getting them so confused now? For comic book movies. Sorry, is it a good sign for comic book movies?
Well, it's an interesting thought because this year we've got The Dark Knight Rises, we've got The Amazing Spider-Man coming out, but there's going to be a quite of a lull, a gap that we haven't seen for a while of comic book films not coming out. Next year we've got Man of Steel, but it's not something people are particularly looking forward to, amazingly.
I can see that being pushed to 2014 as well, that film.
I mean, Iron Man 3 is meant to come out. The suggestions it's coming out next year, but it's not going to come out next year.
I don't know. The
turnover for X-Men was very fast. First class.
They really did get the skates on with the Avengers, to be honest. Because when it was announced at Comic-Con that Joss Whedon was writing it, like 2 years ago, was it? When they first announced Joss Whedon was behind everything. I don't think they even had, a proper script or anything. So they made that movie in, 18 months, probably.
Well, the Avengers is a very exciting prospect, and I'm sure everyone jumped at the chance, and they wanted to bring it out as much as we wanted to see it.
And I mean, that's the thing as well. If you're talking about Iron Man 3, the only person who's got to be available to do that is Robert Downey Jr. And I remember Robert Downey Jr. saying at the moment he's just focused on Sherlock Holmes and Iron Man movies.
I don't know about Robert Downey Jr., but I know that Chris Evans is signed up for 7 or 8 Captain America.
8?
Just they're not going to hold him to it.
Obviously, yeah. But if they're going to make 8, he's down for doing 8.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
Robert Downey Jr. was 5 altogether.
Yeah. Was that including the Avengers movies, though?
Yeah, and he...
Well, five on-screen appearances.
No, it might have been 6, because he did... Tony Stark was in The Incredible Hulk as well.
But does that count, though?
He was Tony Stark. But I think they probably extended the deal, because Robert Downey Jr. seems to have a whale of a time. He's... absolutely fantastic,
everyone's making bank on that franchise. So, the money's not going to if the money hasn't stopped, then the films definitely won't stop.
It always seemed like a unique choice to me, Robert Downey Jr. Because I don't know how old he is, but it always feels like he's been a bit old, and he's playing as a superhero.
Yeah,
but
it really does.
I remember when it was first getting announced that they were making an Iron Man, and it was the runners were Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Cruise.
No,
I could see Tom Cruise, definitely. And Departed.
Tom Cruise is too short to be Iron Man. Tom Cruise would need, lifts in his Iron Man suit to make him tall enough to be Iron Man. Otherwise, you'd just have this really little 5-foot Iron Man just walking about. Looked like some little kid had gone as Iron Man for Halloween, but had a really... some rich kid had some, fucking cool parents who bought him a proper legit Iron Man costume.
To me, the size of Tom Cruise is still speculation. I'd have to see him in real life before I know how tall he is. I think the whole Iron Man thought that Iron Man is the new representative of Marvel taking over the space of Spider-Man, so
yeah,
he's more apparent, he's more relevant.
Well,
he's got more exposure, definitely, especially in the cartoons recently. There's been about 4
four
different iterations of him in the past few years.
The thing is, with Spider-Man, if Marvel could have Spider-Man in those movies, they would definitely do that. Well, the problem is that Sony Pictures still has the licensing rights to Spider-Man, and 20th Century Fox still has the licensing rights to X-Men and Fantastic Four, and that's the reason why you can't have those characters cross over into any Marvel Studio stuff yet. This is why, hopefully, if the new Spider-Man film's an absolute bomb, Disney will finally end up buying the rights off Sony, and then we might have Spider-Man in the Marvel Universe properly.
Well, so is Daredevil still part of 20th Century Fox?
Daredevil's Sony Pictures, I think.
Really?
Columbia TriStar, which is Sony Pictures.
I think they should do themselves a favour and then...
was it Fox? No, it was a Fox film, wasn't it, Daredevil, yeah.
They'll just be like, yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was, yeah. So
they should just put Daredevil in the new Spider-Man film or something. Just be like, yeah, well, we can't make an Avengers, but we can show some people.
Well, they can't put Daredevil in because Fox doesn't own...
Did they lose Daredevil?
Yeah, Fox doesn't have any rights to Daredevil, unfortunately.
Have they still got Fantastic Four? Because there was always that talk about making a Silver Surfer film.
Yeah, I think Sony Pictures have some rights to The Punisher, so The Punisher could actually come into a Spider-Man film. And to be fair, that would work because The Punisher actually debuted in an issue of Spider-Man.
That issue can be seen in Comic Book Man, the TV series from AMC, which is produced by Kevin Smith.
What's with all the Kevin Smith plugs? are you getting sexual favours from
Kevin
Smith?
Jay and Silent Bob, Red Bank, New Jersey. Well, if they do The Punisher, couldn't they do that storyline? I don't know if it's in the comics, but it was in the 1994, was it 1994 animated series? When it was, is it Eric Morbius? Or is Eric...
The Morbius stuff.
With Black Cat and Blade.
I wasn't really into that storyline, though, to be fair. Like, I'd love to see a film with the sort of, like, darker Marvel stuff, but...
Is his name Eric Morbius, or is Eric Morbius the guy from Ugly Betty?
Michael Morbius. Eric Morbius must be the guy from Ugly... I don't watch Ugly Betty, but
he's the guy
assuming.
Of Resident Evil. He's the one that becomes Nemesis.
Oh, that dude. Yeah, that'll be Eric Morbius, then. Yeah. Because Michael Morbius is the guy who turns himself into Morbius, the fucking...
Man Bat.
Don't say that, DC will sue you. Yeah, did you know about Man Bat?
He's a villain in Lego Batman.
Yeah, because he's a villain... Well, he's not really a villain, he's just sort of a guy who changes into a bat. He's not very exciting, to be fair, if anything. But it's a bit... It's just some... I think they were just running out of ideas in the 80s and they were like, shit, what can we do? Well, we've already got Batman. What about... Hey, wait a minute. Take this man here, put it at the front, we've got a man bat.
I think if this really should have broken the fourth wall in the first issue when those two crossed over, I think, and then, like, Batman turns to the reader and goes, where are we going to go with this?
What is up?
Do you see what we did there?
To be fair, if you go back to the Golden Age, there are some ridiculously cheesy, off-the-wall ideas that were flying about in comics. Comics have always had trouble, like... pinpointing the one thing that they need to do to go carry on the characters. And there's been some really embarrassing stuff that have happened, especially in the DC canon, because DC stretches on a lot longer. Like, a lot of people don't realise that DC had, like, a 30-year head start on Marvel Comics.
Is there five generations of... five ages of DC now, isn't it? The Golden, Silver, Bronze, Modern, and 52?
Yeah, well, the new 52, I don't know if you'd class that as a new age, because... It's still the modern age of comics, really.
I saw a documentary recently. It's a very good one. I think it's called The Secret Origins of DC Comics or something like that. And it's got all the people that used to work there. And it's got people like Neil Gaiman and people such as that. And it's all interviews about the different eras of comics and what happened, why they were relevant and stuff. And there was a good storyline that I really think they should do if they ever get around to doing another Green Lantern. Is when the Green Lantern was fighting and then teaming, like, love-hate relationship with the Green Arrow.
Yeah.
The whole drug thing with Speedy.
Oh, yeah, the whole Speedy was on heroin shit, yeah.
Was Speedy the Green Arrow's guy?
Speedy's a Green Arrow sidekick, yeah.
The quiver.
the quiver, yeah.
That's the best... Well, that's going to be like Orgasmo's other sidekick, the Quiver.
But yeah, Speedy was Green Arrow sidekick. But to be fair, that whole storyline was stolen from the idea to touch on that subject, because it was stolen from Spider-Man comics. Basically, what you had after the 1940s, 1950s, this book came out called The Seduction of the Innocent, which talked about how comic books were negatively influencing young people.
That's mentioned in the documentary, I believe.
Yeah, and as a result of this, there was so much...
Marilyn Manson caused Columbia... not Columbia.
Columbine.
Columbine.
And there was so much backlash from this that they had to basically create... Before the American government could censor them directly, they decided to step up and offer to censor themselves. And so basically all the comic industry created... what was known as the Comics Code Authority, if I'm getting that right. I think that's right. But if I'm not right, don't write in about it. I don't care.
If he cares enough, he'll check Wikipedia.
Yeah, exactly. Check Wikipedia.
Because it's not that important.
But basically, it censored comic books, so you weren't allowed, like, overtly graphic violence. You weren't allowed any sort of, like, sexual innuendos at that point. You weren't allowed... anything like that. Drug use was one of the big taboos as well.
Was it Dark Knight Returns when they decided to... after that, DC made DC Knights
from
that or something?
Well, what started it all off with was Spider-Man.
He's not DC.
In an issue of Spider-Man, we actually did a storyline where Harry Osborn became addicted to heroin, and Stan Lee really wanted to do it, and they submitted the work to the Comics Code Authority, and they weren't having any of it. They were saying, like, we can't publish this. So Stan Lee basically said, well, if you can't, because we're not glorifying drugs, we're actually warning kids against this sort of stuff, and we need to put this comic out. We don't just want to put this comic out, we need to put it out. We want to inform kids, we want to, like, give them some sort of moral background. That's the whole point of superhero comics. They basically decided to cut out the Comics Code Authority and release it themselves to just comic shops. It meant that the comics couldn't be carried on newsstands anymore, but it also meant that people could get access to, like, material straight from the author like that, and that's where the direct marketing comics came from. And the Comics Code Authority, that hung about for quite a while. I mean, some books still even use it today, but for all intents and purposes, direct market tends to be the way it goes by, like, these days.
So did Harry Osborn, did he look like the 1994 Spider-Man cartoon version?
Oh, yeah, he's always had that sort of...
The strange red and black
hair. He's always had that sort of stripy head look, yeah.
I always thought that in the cartoon series, wasn't it that Hobgoblin was there before Green Goblin? He was a thief that took all of those things before the Green Goblin could be made. And then...
See, that? Well, that's the way the cartoon did it, but in the comic book, the Green Goblin was a very established villain by that point. Like, we're talking years, because the Hobgoblin didn't really come about... I think it was either the late 70s or the early 80s. And the storyline basically went that whoever the Hobgoblin was, he was chased into the sewers by the police after committing a crime. And while he was in the sewers, he found one of Norman Osborn's secret hideouts in that sewer and used his materials to become the Hobgoblin.
Well,
it's a pretty shitty origin story.
Yeah, in modern times, you just have some kind of, like, kill switch like iPhones do if they get stolen. And you're just like, nope, you're not using that.
That's true, but, I mean, obviously, it was written back when people didn't really have that much of an idea about technology, so you can't say too much about it.
Well, we'll take this time to see what we are up to in our own nerdy lives at the moment. Rick, what are you playing, watching, or looking forward to seeing?
Looking forward to seeing Prometheus. Yes. 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 Prometheus is going to be the one.
Have you seen the Michael Fassbender teaser trailer?
I have. I've seen everything that there is to do with that movie so far, and I've got a boner just thinking about it right now, if I'm honest. Like, that film's going to be fucking hard. That film's going to be so good.
The problem with it is it's going to have the shadow of everyone's going to wonder what alien references they're going to see.
Well, they've already shown you alien references. We've already seen stuff that looks like xenomorphs in the trailers.
But will there be xenomorphs?
I'm assuming there will be some reference to the xenomorph, but it's more about the space jockey, if anything.
We're going to see a predator, do you think?
We won't. I don't think we're going to see a predator. I don't think Ridley Scott thinks too highly of the predators.
I think that would be amazing. They're just like, look what direction we went.
We went and did this.
In the trailer, there's something that's trying to get to Earth in a spaceship, by the looks of it. For the podcast fans listening at home, Rick just nods.
But if you heard any bump, then that was just me hitting the mic with my massive nose.
You just nuzzled it.
Sorry, did I say massive nose? I meant
just
massive nose.
Just got Pavlovian trained.
That's true.
So what games are you playing and what TV shows are you watching?
At the moment, TV shows, I'm just watching Game of Thrones. Which is pretty stock answer, because I'm sure that anybody who's interested in anything remotely geeky is watching Game of Thrones at the moment. Obviously, I'm not going to speak too much about that, because major spoilers. But it's really, really fucking good at the moment. Like, I'm getting really stoked just to see where it's all going, where it's all moving. The characters are developing really well. And I've just got to say, shout out to my boy Tyrion Lannister. That guy kills it. Peter Dinklage just kills that program.
Absolutely.
Would you agree? Peter Dinklage makes that show.
I've always been a fan of Peter Dinklage.
Yeah, station agent. If anybody's
elf.
Yeah, if anybody
an elf one more time.
If anybody listening's ever watched Game of Thrones and thought Tyrion Lannister's cool, but I haven't really seen him in anything else, go and watch. The station agent's definitely the place to start, because that's his best film where he's got a starring role.
Well, it's a drama, so. If you want to see him in a drama role,
it's got a bit of lightheartedness to it. It's a good film. I mean, I'm not normally a drama sort of guy, but I sat through that pretty easily.
Of course, there's Elf, who is directed by Jon Favreau, the director of Iron Man's 1 and 2.
Yeah, and
Swingers. He didn't do Swingers. Doug Liman did Swingers.
Yeah, he did.
Doug Liman, the man who made Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
But Jon Favreau was a producer on the Avengers, I think.
He was. Yes.
Yeah, so I always thought he'd fallen out with Marvel over the whole you're not directing Iron Man 2 thing, but obviously it seems...
Well, he kind of didn't want to at the same time.
Oh, it wasn't...
I think it was kind of like a relief kind of thing.
Well, he was in Iron Man 2 still, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, that's a thought. He probably won't be in Iron Man 3, will he? Scarlett Johansson.
He wasn't in the Avengers. We didn't get to see him in the Avengers.
Scarlett Johansson is not to appear in Iron Man 3, apparently.
But that's
she won't be missed. Oh,
but I think that's more...
Her place is in the Avengers now. She doesn't need to return to the Stark world.
I think that's less to do with the fact that that Scarlett Johansson doesn't want to do an Iron Man 3 or anything like that. More to the fact that she's going to be busy doing the Black Widow spin-off movie. That's inevitably... No, that is inevitable.
I can see her voicing a cartoon and an anime.
No, I can see a full-on Black... Like, after that ass, I can see a full Black Widow spin-off.
Because apparently there's...
At least at the very least, Black Widow and Hawkeye spin-off.
There's a lot of talk about animation in the Disney universe.
They're hooked up with animation now, aren't they, Marvel Studios? So they don't ever have to worry about not being able to get great animation anymore.
I mean, Edgar Wright did fantastic work writing Tintin, but we don't want it to be an animated Ant-Man film, which he has officially signed up to do now.
Well, he's been playing with it for a long time. Like, I remember about 2008. Somewhere around that time, that was when the first rumours started to surface. It was just after Hot Fuzz hit the cinemas, so that would have been 2007. Yeah, it was about 2007. Just in fact, coincidentally enough, Robert Kirkman had just done a really excellent 12-issue run on a new Ant-Man series for Marvel at that time, and it was really good. And
Robert Kirkman, to the starters out there, is the writer of the acclaimed Walking Dead.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. And he's also the reason why the TV series has picked up a lot towards the end of the season, because he came back and sorted everything out.
We can't knock Frank Darabont. He's an excellent filmmaker. And the first episode of Walking Dead is an absolutely amazing pilot.
It's the only show, The Walking Dead is the only show that I know where people don't watch that show because it's a good show. They watch it because they know it's got potential to be a really good show.
I'm not sure if I follow.
Like, every episode, like, from my own personal experience, apart from that groundbreaking pilot and a few good episodes, it's that point where you're just always thinking, like, that episode wasn't that good, but I know for a fact this scenario, these characters, it could work. It could be a really great show. I mean, like reading the comics as well, you know how those characters can work and what sort of scenarios you could bring up in a situation like that.
Anyone that reads the Walking Dead comics can agree with me that the latest issue of Walking Dead was not very good at all. Absolutely nothing happens in it at all. Some people are annoyed at something somebody did in the last issue. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, but to be fair, you could say that about 20 of the... Well, you could say that about 3/4 of the episodes of the Walking Dead television programme, to be fair.
Absolutely. It's that thing that we're coming to a time now when we always seem to watch things in big bulks. Mm. So we'll go through seasons of things like for instance, I'm watching The Larry Sanders Show, which is a classic TV show produced by Judd Apatow and written by Gary Shandling. If anyone's a fan of Ricky Gervais's Extras, that's where the influence came from. It's absolutely brilliant. Jeffrey Tambor's fantastic. I might as well mention what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Probably had a point for something, but I'm not going to go for it. I'm playing Final Fantasy VII for the first time properly. It's a pretty good game. I've got to the point where I usually get in Final Fantasies, though. It happened in 8 when I'm very close to the end, but my motivation's just dropped.
I don't know how you could have finished Final Fantasy VIII. Final Fantasy VIII is the perfect one. It is the one.
I'm a 9 and 10.
I know that anybody listening to this who is a Final Fantasy fan right now is going to go, what the hell did that guy just say? But Final Fantasy VIII, seriously, go back to it. As a grown-up, forget about when you were a kid and you used to enjoy Final Fantasy VII. It really hasn't held up that well. You go play Final Fantasy VII right now, you'll agree. It's not that good a game. You just remember it being really good. Like, literally, though, play Final Fantasy VIII, get into the junction system properly, you'll realise it is the ultimate banger. It is the best Japanese RPG ever made.
The thing about 8 and 10 that was good is something that 7 and 9 tripped on was that they gave you the characters, all your characters, at a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah.
They're all always towards the start, but like 9 and 7, they give you characters way into the game and you're like, I have no patience for these people. I don't want to use armor and I don't want to use Cid.
See, what I still love about Final Fantasy VIII is, like, if you want to play that game like really well and do really well at that game, leveling up actually hurts you until like a certain point in the game where you've got all your skills and stuff to like invest points into things. Oh, before that point, leveling up actually makes you weaker because everything in that game, even bosses, level up with you. So if you're still level 1, that doesn't matter because you'll still be fighting that boss around that sort of level. It's just all about junctioning stuff properly so that you're well equipped to go into that battle.
I'm also playing at the moment Uncharted 3, Drake's Deception, which is a pretty fantastic game. Anyone who plays the Uncharted games will know that it's a very good game. The fighting system still hasn't sorted itself out, which is a shame. It looks by this point in time it's not going to. But the whole adventure aspect, the storyline, the writing, it's top-end gaming in that sense, I find. Have you heard about the new PlayStation All-Stars game?
Oh, yeah, I have. It looks a bit shit, to be fair. It looks very cheesy. It doesn't need to happen.
Yeah, it's...
And to be honest, they call that game All-Stars, but... I mean, Sony have some good exclusives, but I wouldn't really... Apart from Kratos, Nathan Drake, Jack and Daxter, I wouldn't really call any of their lineup like All-Stars.
The problem is, it's 10 years too late.
Crash Bandicoot. Was Crash Bandicoot in it?
He hasn't been announced, but...
But he's got to be. He's got
Xbox games.
He has now, yeah. He used to be a Sony man.
It, like 10 years ago, you could put...
Spyro, yeah,
you could
Crash.
Put Crash Bandicoot, you could put Ratchet and Clank, it would have been in 10
yeah.
years.
But saying
you could
that...
put
yeah.
even Gex and things like
well,
that.
Well, yeah, right? Gex, yeah, Gex.
Jersey Devil, things from Pandemonium.
The Pandemonium people. Yeah, there were so many exclusives back on Sony systems back then.
I mean, then you could legitimately put Snake Plissken in as well.
Well, yeah, like, I mean, to an extent, I always find
so
that...
Do you think they can put Snake Plissken in? It seems though he's in the Smash Brothers Brawl.
Snake Plissken? You just mean Solid Snake? Snake Plissken's the guy out of Escape from New York.
Oh, yeah, because, like, Plissken's what he calls himself...
In Metal Gear Solid 2, he calls Sons himself Iroquois Plissken, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Which literally means Snake Plissken, because Iroquois is, like, an Indian tribe named after a snake.
Shout out to my boy, John Carpenter.
Snake Plissken, hardest man in the world.
But I guess, I don't know if... Is there any kind of little portable ops game or something for the Nintendo consoles that warranted him being in it?
No, not for the Nintendo. They've recently just brought out Snake Eater 3DS, but that was the first appearance on for Solid Snake on a Nintendo console since Snake's Revenge on the Nintendo Entertainment. Oh, no, actually, Metal Gear Solid Game Boy back in 1998.
Oh, yes.
Which was actually a banger. It was really good for a Game Boy game. That game's actually really, really fucking good.
I remember I had a Game Boy magazine one time, and it was talking about how Donkey Kong was coming to it, and it had this screenshot of Donkey Kong Country for Super Nintendo, which had extremely crisp graphics at the time. It was extremely clear. And then you've got a picture of a very similar part of the game for the Game Boy, and it looks absolutely crap. But the caption underneath was, you can barely tell the difference, and I couldn't tell if they were taking the piss or not.
I know, you can definitely tell the difference. But I mean, at the time we were really swindled, because I remember when Alone in the Dark came out for the Game Boy Color, that game actually looked legit like a PlayStation game for my untrained eyes.
There is some breakout things like, I can't remember what it was called, I think it was called like Going Commandos or something. Yeah. are little military men or something like that. And
toy soldiers?
It had FMVs, like proper FMVs.
What, on a Game Boy game?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Actual motion video? That's impressive for a Game Boy game. But it brings us to a regular section of the podcast.
It's about to become regular.
Well, it will be if we do it next time. If we don't do it, it'll just be a one-off.
Yeah, I think we'll do it next time.
I think we'll probably do it next time.
This is a section where we pick 10 things of a subject, and it's also got an honourable mention and a kind of throwaway one as well. So it's about 12 things on a certain subject. So like your regular top 10, it could be something like the top 10 Pink Floyd songs or something like that.
But it's not.
In our instance, it's going to be something quite specific but broad at the same time.
Yeah. It is the top 10 people that have gone out like punks.
This is called Out Like a Punk.
And basically, what would you define as going out like a punk?
Going out like a punk is a character that we've been led to believe has some kind of prominence within a feature. And
sort of big deal, yes.
Yeah, we look at them and you think, that guy's important.
Yeah, that guy's going to sort everything out.
Through the traits of cinema, that's what happened. But then all of a sudden, they are taken out very unceremoniously in an almost throwaway kind of gesture. Like, we just got sick of it. Like, Stephen King does it a lot in the films of his versions. But we'll start at my number one. Well, it's not in order, actually. So the first person I picked was... Oh, by the way, there's a lot of spoilers in this.
Yeah, so if you haven't... I mean, none of these films are recent films. They're all a couple of years old, at least.
Yes, the
But if you haven't seen the Lord of the Rings films and you're waiting to see those...
Or Harry Potter 3.
Yeah, no, Harry Potter 5, actually.
Oh, 5, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, sorry, get your Harry Potter... I don't even like Harry Potter.
The introduction was in the third one. Right, well... The first person I picked was Greg Kinnear's character in Mystery Man. I didn't have time to research what his character was called. He's basically the superhero that decides to free a supervillain in order to give himself a challenge. He's a very cocky, arrogant guy. And then he's tied up, and then the Mystery Men, who are this ragtag team of people featuring like Ben Stiller and Paul Rubens and Janine Garofalo, they break in, and they're trying to free him from this chair, and then he's getting like really annoyed, and then they accidentally press the wrong thing, and they kill him, and... There goes that guy.
Yep, out like a punk. Mine is probably like an all-time classic movie scene now, but in Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, if I'm correct, it's the first one, isn't it? Raiders of the Lost Ark. There's a scene where Indy's being chased in the marketplace, everyone knows it, and the guy comes out brandishing a sword, shows off all his moves, and you think, this is going to be a big fight, this is going to be something really big. Indy pulls out his gun, bang, guy's down. Down like a punk, in the most clearest example of the term.
You could also say that the guy from, was it Raiders of Lost Ark again? The guy from Alf Wiedersehen Pet. You know, the big muscular Nazi guy.
Oh, yeah.
The propellers. But,
Well, no, because they have a good fight. They have a big fight, and like he puts up a fight, that guy.
But he's hoisted by his own petard.
Yeah.
Turn around with a giant noise behind him.
Such a petard.
My other choice is Cyclops, Scott Summers, played by James Marsden in X-Men 3, The Last Stand by Brett Ratner.
What, that amazing X-Men 3 film that everyone loved. To be honest, I don't mind X-Men 3. I think it gets a bad rap. It's not X-Men 2, but what is?
There's a reason why James Marsden's character was written off in X-Men 3 is because he'd signed with Bryan Singer to do Superman Returns. So he didn't have as much time to be a full-time X-Men in that film. And see where that got him.
Yep.
He is in 30 Rock now, so it's fine.
My next one on the list, we were talking about Sirius Black from the Harry Potter films.
Harry Potter!
And the books as well, if you know how to read.
we'll assume you do.
Basically... Obviously, there's a little bit more to it than that, but the whole reason Sirius Black dies in the film and in the book is that he gets knocked through a curtain. I mean, it's a special curtain that kills people, but still, guy gets killed by falling through a curtain. Not just like a normal guy, somebody who's actually integral to the storyline who deserves a good death.
Well, actually, when you think about it, was it an Avada Kedavra that hit him by Bella Latrice?
No, well, maybe it was in the... in the film, but I remember specifically in the book, it was the fact that it was a specific curtain that he got knocked through that killed him.
But it was definitely Bella Latrice that did something.
Yeah, but still, he went out like a punk, considering he was supposed to be like one of the main characters. Like he was like the only guy who was actually good at magic.
He was a fan favourite as well.
Gary Oldman, obviously going to be a fan favourite.
Well, the character all throughout the two books.
In the books as well, yeah. Like I always thought he was one of the more interesting characters in the books when I used to read him.
But he did have to go because he did promise Harry a life away from the Dursleys, even though they didn't really feature prominently after that much. But Harry had to stay with the Dursleys. He couldn't live that life with him. So my next one is Bill Paxton's character. You might know Bill Paxton from films such as Aliens, films such
Game as Over, man! Game Over!
He's also in Terminator.
He is in Terminator, that's right.
And he's in a lot of other films. More recently, the TV series Big Love, which I tried watching. I didn't think it was that good. But this instance, it's a film, Club Dread. He's the only name in that film. It's from those people that made Super Troopers, which is a quite good film.
It's not.
The Broken Lizard people. I like it.
Don't listen to him. It's a terrible film.
Beerfest's a bad film.
Yeah, Beerfest is a better film. If you're going to watch
a bad film.
No, Beerfest is better.
Beerfest is terrible.
Nah.
Eric Christian Olsen.
Just dumb. With a
fake German accent.
But carry on.
He's like the main name in the entire film, and he doesn't play his general self in it. And just later on when the serial killings, because it's a slasher film, slasher comedy, he just ends up being dead somewhere. And it's like, well, all right.
That's good.
I guess your contract ran out. I'm going to be here for 10 days, and then I'm gone. You figure out.
My next one's not from that great a film, but from the Judge Dredd movie. It's Mean Machine.
This is the law. I am the law.
Thanks for that impression. Just so that you knew which film I was talking about.
That wasn't a soundbite, by the way.
Yeah, just so you know, just in case anyone at Universal Pictures or whoever the hell put that monstrosity out, that wasn't a clip of Sylvester Stallone. That was just an impression.
See,
I know it was very pro. But
I taught him everything he knows.
But yeah, Mean Machine, for people who've seen the film but might not remember because of it, again, being terrible, was the guy who had like the metal head and had like a dial on him to switch him to different states of anger. And to be honest, he gives Dredd a big headbutt and all that sort of stuff, but he kills him so easily. He just rips a wire out of his arm and just electrocutes him. And it just looks like he's beat him so easily, considering that he's such a hench guy. He just goes down like a punk.
You can't touch that. You're a judge. You have to be a judge to touch that. I guess I must be a judge then.
Okay. Don't worry, we'll cut this bit out.
Sorry. My next one is from the classic Mortal Kombat Annihilation. Now, if anyone's seen the first Mortal Kombat film, it's quite an enjoyable film. It holds as close to the film as it can, whilst also lending a lot of traits from End of the Dragon. But the breakout performance is Johnny Cage, the character in Mortal Kombat 1, I think. He's really funny.
Oh, in Mortal Kombat 1, yeah. Mortal Kombat 1, sick.
Those are $500 sunglasses.
I mean, it is probably the most accurate representation of a video game in cinema, without a doubt. Yeah. I'm not even being sarcastic. It genuinely does capture everything that makes the Mortal Kombat games good. It's just that the second one's not that great, is it, Adam?
It features a lot of the characters, which is nice to see them. It's like, oh, there's Cyrax, there's Mataro, but it's not strong. But the problem is that Johnny Cage dies within the first 5 minutes of the film. He does his little flying kick at Shao Kahn. Shao Kahn stops it because he's top dog. And then he just snaps his neck. And then that's Johnny Cage out of the mix.
Down like a punk, unfortunately. Yeah. Yeah, and another one for me.
But that's a strange thing as well. Like, this thing comes out of the ground when he dies. Do you remember?
No,
like,
just,
the ground
just,
lifts
just,
up.
Just grabs him, yeah. It's like, yeah, you're dead, and we're going to grab you now.
And it does that thing, like, Raiden's got all of the generals in, like, this electric bubble, and he's like, if you don't let Johnny Cage go, I'm going to kill all of them.
That film's just fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Another one for me, the film Blade Runner, Zora goes down like an absolute punk.
Daryl Hannah.
No, Zora's not Daryl Hannah, no. Daryl Hannah's Pris.
Ah.
She doesn't go down like a punk. She fucking chokes him out with her thighs and everything.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, she, like, puts her fingers up his nose. Well, depending on which cut you've got, she puts her fingers up his nose and, like, rags him back and everything. It looks horrid.
But I kind of remember going out, like, not looking after herself, though, wasn't it? It's just, like, no self-preservation of her character.
But Zora's the woman in the nightclub who wears the PVC raincoat. Like, and she kicks him in the balls when she's about to run away from Deckard, which, fair enough, he stalled him. But as soon as he gets back on out to that street, he just puts a few in her back and she falls through the glass, down like a punk. Considering she's supposed to be a replicant, considering she's supposed to be this dangerous thing on Earth, it doesn't really come across.
They don't have a good threshold, do they, those robots?
Not really.
My next one is Venom. Topher Grace or Eddie Brock, Spider-Man 3. Now, we all wanted a big deal out of Venom, and from what we saw of Venom, he was kind of cool. You know, we enjoyed seeing him. He looked good. Anyway, he wasn't the hulking mass of Venom which we all wanted.
Did he?
But he was Venom.
But he kept doing that thing where he showed his face from like most of the film. I don't want to see his face. I want to see a big tongue like. Blah.
It's got one of those like the coolest lines in
and
cinema.
And why isn't he saying like we? Like he's saying it's got I.
One, but doesn't have one of the cool lines in cinema. It's just like you don't have to do this, and he's just like, but I like being bad. It makes me happy. That's awesome. I like that line. Anyway, he gets typical symbiote treatment. He gets hit by higher frequencies from pipes, and then it's a pumpkin bomb or whatever they are.
Basically, what always brings Venom down as a villain is the fact that even a bell can make him go wig out.
Same with Daredevil, really.
Yeah, Daredevil shares a similar, but at least Daredevil could put like earplugs in and. But then Daredevil would be fucked because then he would genuinely be blind.
Yes,
and then
exactly.
That
would be a good fight, I think. Bell tower,
you know,
Daredevil versus Venom.
I don't think comic book writers think about these things, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you shouldn't wear PVC headgear because I think that can't help.
The penultimate one on our list is the Witch King from Lord of the Rings. And that always got me just because of the whole. No man can kill me, sort of thing. That's probably not how he does the voice.
Remember what he sounds like.
I don't remember what he sounds like at all. I just did a typical evil voice. I've seen that movie once. I thought it was boring. I'll be honest.
I love Lord of the Rings. I'm sure many of you agree with me.
But then all of a sudden, like everyone else is just getting fucked up by him. All of a sudden, is she an elf or a hobbit? She's a little hobbit woman, isn't she? Is she a human?
Yeah.
She looks little.
She's a princess of Rohan.
Oh, yeah, she's that bad, isn't she? Yeah, she pulls off her helmet. She just goes, I am no man. And then stabs him through the head straight away. Like, he doesn't even try and block it.
And then his head gets crushed.
Like if you were crushing a tin of pop.
Yes, it's quite strange. The last one on the list, the official list, is... The Hunter guy, I can't remember his name.
Yeah, I never remember that guy's name. Just the guy at the beginning.
He's a good actor, and he's from Jurassic Park before we digress.
It's the guy at the beginning who's all like, shooter, shooter.
Shooter. It's the bit when he spends a good 30, 45 seconds unclipping his gun.
Yeah.
Getting the little holsters right and stuff about to shoot.
I know, like he makes out like he's going in to be big business, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's... He brought the wrong type of gun, really. And then he said, well, he's gone. The honourable mentions that we're putting out there are the nameless and, well, named as well, soldiers, colonial marines, if you want to call them that.
From Alien, basically.
And Starship Troopers.
Yeah. Well, from Starship Troopers, like everyone who looks like they're going to be hard ends up getting killed unless it's Johnny Rico. And in Alien, again, anybody who looks
like... Instead, his career died.
Yeah.
Sorry, Casper Van Dien, I liked you in Sleepy Hollow.
He's a bit crazy, though, that guy, isn't he? He's a bit crazy. Like, I was watching an interview with him on the YouTubes the other day, and he talks about how Halo...
His next movie's coming out.
He talks about how Halo ripped off Starship Troopers, but he goes insane about it as if, like, somebody explicitly stole something that he made and turned it into a video game. And, again, like, in Alien, you got, like, Hicks, you got Vasquez, you got all these hard fucking Marines, and yet some woman who was just, like, a worker on an engineering ship seems to be the only person who can deal with aliens, it seems. Everyone else goes out like a punk.
A fucking kid.
But obviously, the big one, and the one that's the top on our list...
3, 2, 1, Boba Fett!
Obviously, like, all the way, like, the only useful thing that Boba Fett does in the original Star Wars trilogy, the prequel trilogy doesn't count for anything, because that's... No, the prequel trilogy doesn't count. They're terrible.
Sorry, guys, I like him.
But, yeah, the only thing that he does...
He's no good to me, Dad.
The only thing he does in the original trilogy that's of any use to anyone, he pushes the trolley with Han's frozen body on at the end of Empire towards his ship.
And there's a little bit.
Oh, he delivers him to Jabba, doesn't he? Basically, he's supposed to be a big fucking bounty hunter, and the most useful thing he does is deliver a package throughout that entire trilogy of films.
And if you remember correctly, there was a bit of foreshadowing in the prequel trilogy with his dad dying. Like,
prequel trilogy didn't happen.
Jango Fett was awesome. And he's awesome in Tony Hawk 4.
Fair enough.
Jango Jet Jump all the way, man. So, I think we've rounded out our first podcast. Next week, we'd love you to join in with our top 10 of Deus Ex Machina.
If you have any ideas about what your top 10 Deus Ex Machinas are, or if you just want to know what the hell a Deus Ex Machina is...
Rick, I think you should explain that, so we can hopefully get some people.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll explain the Deus Ex Machina before we go. Basically, it comes from the term God in the Machine, and it's basically at the end of a movie or a TV show, it's where something like miraculous happens that wraps up the whole plot in a tiny bow. Like, for example, take Doctor Who. As much as I love Doctor Who, that sonic screwdriver comes in way too useful. Like, that's a Deus Ex Machina. Basically, there's this machine and it's going to blow up, but wait a minute, my sonic screwdriver is just about able to do something that nothing else ever could have done to save the day.
They do it in Sailor Moon and Power Rangers as well, don't they?
They do it in a lot of things. Like, anything that comes at the end of the thing that hasn't been established in the script and just saves the day or changes the story completely is a Deus Ex Machina.
So we'd love you to join in. To contact, Twitter me at cmadamadman, which is at cmadamadman.
Again.
And remember to rate us on iTunes. We'd love to hear some feedback from you.
And if your attention span wasn't long enough to read Adam's contact details, you'll find all of that on the iTunes page.
At cmadman.
So that's been our podcast for this week.
Podcast number one, baby, yeah.
So from both of us at the Nerd Chasm Basement, we thank you for listening and hope to see you again.
Live long and prosper, bitches.
Indeed. Bye bye.